Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi everyone, I'm Steve Sutherland. I'd like to welcome you to the third part of this special four-part interview organised by the Cheltenham Athletic Community Trust and in association with our friends at Cheltenham Live with Cheltenham great Keith Peacock. Now, I'm proud to be an ambassador of CACT, which as you know is working extremely hard at this important time on the community hub on behalf of Royal Borough of Greenwich, and that supports vulnerable local residents. And CAP staff are out there delivering food parcels, collecting prescriptions, providing other invaluable support at this very, very stressful time. Other important CAP projects haven't been forgotten. They've been adapted, such as the Football and Sports Development Programme and the Extra Time Hub for older people, to ensure that CAP continues to support the community in the way that it always has done. Now, in part one, we covered the 60s and 70s, Keith's career. In part two, we covered that era when Keith was away from the club, the whole 10 years he spent in America, and then coming back, starting his managerial career in the UK at Gillingham and Maidstone, with a little spell at QPR in between. Part three today, we're going to be talking about Keith's return to Cheltenham in the 90s. So with no further ado, let's welcome the man himself, Mr. Keith Peacock. Hi, Keith.
Hi, Steve. Good to hear from you again.
It's great, and I really enjoyed the reminiscences and going through your career, Keith. But and last one, obviously, you were away from the club the whole 10 years. But it didn't take long after you'd left Maidstone. Let's pick it up from where we left it before. You'd left Maidstone and a couple of months out of the game, collect your thoughts, I suppose, wonder what you're going to be doing next. And then you received the call from Mr. Lenny Lawrence, didn't you?
Yes, Lenny asked me to come along to the training ground. And we'd spoken many times in terms of trading players, mainly me buying from... free transfers from Cheltenham when I was at Gillingham and a little bit of Maidstone. So,
had you known Lenny before much? Because obviously he had an interesting route into football himself, didn't he?
Yes, I first came across him when I was manager of Gillingham, and he had taken over. I didn't know him, I didn't know his name hardly. Arrived at Cheltenham to talk about a player. He's signing one of the players he had, and he struck me as very, very confident, and he went on obviously to be a very well-known manager, a very successful career.
Yeah, did brilliantly for Cheltenham. He was a great bloke to work with as well, I have to say, for me personally.
Absolutely. He just asked me to come along. He said, look, between jobs, would you like to do a little bit of scouting for me, just to keep an eye on certain players? He knew that I had a bit of a record for discovering certain players in the lower division, so maybe I could have been helpful. But it was nice, and that happened quite a bit when managers lose their job. Other managers may phone up and keep them going in terms of keeping in touch with everything.
Well, it's a win-win, nice. Really, Keith, isn't it? Because you're helping the club that you're scouting for. You're also keeping yourself in the shop window, if I can use that phrase.
Yes, you're keeping all the contacts going. You're keeping up to date with the latest players that are coming on the scene. And that's so very, very important. So that was lovely. Of course, being back to my old club, even in this sort of just an easy way, not particularly doing a lot of work, but seeing certain games, was very nice. And short-lived, it was probably about 2 months at the very most.
And Cheltenham, of course, was still, this is March 91 time, Cheltenham are still very much at Sellers Park.
Yes, indeed, yes. So I don't think I went across there. I would be on Saturdays when Charlton were playing at their away home at Selhurst Park. I would be looking at a few players. Just on the weekends in the main. Although I did have a look at Colin Walsh. My longest trip was going to Middlesbrough to see Colin Walsh, who was recovering from a broken leg, and I drove up there, watched him play, and he was almost getting back to his full fitness then. So it was just keeping an eye on that. And the following season, he was back playing for us.
Absolutely, and how?
Yeah.
He was to come to the fore a little bit later as well. So at that time, someone who worked very, very closely with Lenny and, in fact, worked closely with all of us at the club at that time, although I just left, was a guy called Arnie Warren, of course. And Arnie controlled the scouting in those days, didn't he?
Yes, Arnie was the general manager at heading the scouting department. So he had his own men doing different stuff around the country and certainly in the southern part of England. So I got to know Arnie quite well in that time. He was a forceful character.
Yeah.
But no sooner, as I say, I'd been there for a few months, and then I was at the end of the season coming up, and I was just talking to Lenny in his famous room where he had the red carpet down there.
A big office for
no one person, indeed. And there was something afoot in when he was talking to me about the possible future, which made me think, maybe something's happening with Lenny. He didn't think too much about it, but soon afterwards it came out that he was moving to Middlesbrough. And
because I remember I was actually invited by Lenny to be on his testimonial committee, and we had one meeting at Bob Bevan's offices, I then got a phone call from Lenny a couple of days later, I think, just saying on his way up to Middlesbrough, he phoned me from his car phone to say, thanks, but we probably won't be having a testimonial committee now. He was on his way to sign for Middlesbrough.
Yeah.
And, of course, that probably put you in the driving seat to replace him, wouldn't it? You're in situ. You're a proven ex-manager. You're a club legend. You're perfectly placed to replace Lenny at that time.
Yes, probably on paper, and certainly reading the papers at that time. Well, that was the local papers speculating who would be the next manager. I did have that 9 years experience as well as being out in Tampa Bay for a couple of years as assistant manager. So, I there's a very good chance perhaps that I was going to be made manager. But it had a funny twist to it because there was Alan Kirbyshire, Steve Gritt, who both put in for the job and came to me. They said, look, we both put in for the job. We'll see what happens, which was fine. And, of course, the training has started now. They need to get going to training. So we started training, and a decision was made after about a week or so of training. And I was asked if I'd like to, by Arnie, he was the one that spoke to me first, would I be prepared to be manager of the reserves, as well as in the future getting involved in the scouting side of things as well. As reserve team manager, I had to think about that, and I thought very hard because, yes, is this going to be a job? Do I wait for another managerial job to come up? I decided this is the one club that, no, I was happy to return to, take the reserves and hopefully be of some help as a more senior person in the background to the two young managers. They were going joint managers.
It was so new at the time, Keith, wasn't it? The concept of joint managers, two unproven senior pros, but unproven at management level, unproven at coaching level, really. It was quite a decision.
It was a huge decision. I've got to say, and I'll be quite honest, I felt joint managers. This is not going to work. This is it.
Mm.
They came as a surprise. All right, I'd accepted my situation there, and I'm very much looking forward to it. And I thought that this, I don't see how this can work. However, I was completely wrong.
Yeah,
3 years or so that Alan and Chrissy worked together, they really dovetailed so well.
Yes.
Chrissy did a lot of stuff that probably Curves wasn't happy with doing, and vice versa. Curves would be there, more vociferous in many ways, and it worked perfectly. As a trio, I'd like to...
No, as a trio, but, you know, thinking about it, it was quite clever by Arnie and obviously Roger Orwin, chairman at the time. It was quite clever because you were there ready in case it fell apart, weren't you? You were the senior guy. You were on the books. You were reserve team manager. So if this gamble hadn't worked, you were there, weren't you?
Yeah, I suppose that's always there, probably in the background. It's nice to have someone that can fill in and... whether it's short time or longer time, but I didn't realise at the time that I would do that. But in for two games, about 20 years on,
you had a long apprenticeship for that one.
A long apprenticeship. They thought I was ready to actually make the grade as a manager by then.
Yeah,
I was ready to my 60s.
Yes, one match, wasn't it, Keith?
Sorry.
One match, wasn't it?
It was. No, don't underestimate my managerial powers. I was brought back in after Parkinson and Parkinson before him had been sacked. We lost 5-2, I think it was, at home to Swindon. And I was asked the following day if I would actually take the team, and I had been just as an associate director. But that was then, and Tottenham Hotspur away in the Cup, which we lost, but we never had a great Cup record, apart from 1947, 46 as well. This league game, a 2-2 draw at Sheffield Wednesday. So my record stands undefeated in the league.
Yeah, all right. Okay. I stand corrected. Right, we'll go back to the 90s now.
Back to the 90s. But it was good. It worked well, and as I was saying...
Oh, no, it worked so well. And, and of course, plans at this time now will be for us to leave Selhurst Park and start at West Ham United, Upton Park.
Yes, our first game, I think, was against Newcastle. And, it went well. And through those early years, what happened, and this is where Gritty and... Curbs did ever so well. They, like most managers do, when they get into a new job, they go with tried and trusted people.
Yes.
And we got in players, and it was down to them, certainly in the main, at this point. Arnie had a bit of say, I'm sure, at that time. Mm-hmm. We had people like Gary Nelson came in the building. Gatting, Bumstead, Alan Pardew.
Yeah, all senior players, proven players.
That's right. They were steady. They were sound.
I think more to the point, Keith. Possibly we've heard a lot about they're a Charlton person. Mm. I think each one of these were Charlton people at the time. You know, they took on that mantle, didn't they? They slotted into that. What the club was about.
Yes, and because of the type of characters they were, and don't forget, they joined just like Simon Webster, who was there, Carl Leeburn, who was such an influence. Probably you'd hope he'd score more goals, but he scored a good number of goals, and the players love playing with him, especially if you're an attacking midfielder or a forward like Gary Nelson was.
Yeah.
Scott Minto, of course, you had young Scott Minto in the team, who is going on to become an excellent player.
So it was a good mix of experienced players, but to be successful, you need a really good balance of experience and talented young players. And we certainly had some talent coming through at that time, that you were reserve team manager, Steve and Alan in charge. Players you just mentioned, Scott Minto, but Anthony Barnes came through, Darren Pitcher, of course. Robert Lee was still there.
A huge one. He unfortunately didn't get back to. We were at West Ham. I think he scored the first goal in that first game. Robert Lee, and probably one of the most outstanding players that I've had over the years. And I never expected him, quite honestly, to go as high as he did in terms of international honours. But he was an excellent player. And
you say that, Keith?
Well, no, people often say afterwards, you know, we all like to say, oh, well, saw this, but I knew he was, you know, I knew Cascarino was going to pay for Ireland or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But sometimes you can get carried. I would say I thought and recommended him, obviously, that he was a very good player and could play in the Premiership. But I probably didn't see the heights he could go to. Loved working with him in training and watching him play. And unfortunately, from his point of view, he was there for the West Ham days, but
didn't get back to the Valley.
We had to sell him before that, yeah.
Well, and that's exactly the right term. We had him. We needed the money to make that move back to the Valley, and we were just short of the money, and Robert had to be sold. And I remember him telling the story at the recent Q&A that we had, that he really didn't want to go north. Lenny was in for him as Middlesbrough manager, wasn't he? And then Keegan came onto the scene and took him to Newcastle, and the rest is history.
Yes, and I got a phone call from Gavin, and he's with Kevin Keegan, and that saw on one of the newspaper posters that Robert Lee was going to sign for Middlesbrough. Kevin jumped straight on that and made sure that if he was coming north, going north, he would go to Newcastle. And once you have a conversation with Kevin Keegan, 99% of the time you'll end up wanting to do,
yes,
or join him, because he was exceptional.
Yeah, yeah. He went on to have a great career. So, but let's go back to Curbs and Grissy, what they're doing there. They're bringing in these characters. And I know you did it at, when you took over at Gillingham, you brought in players that you were comfortable with, that you knew what you could get out of them, you knew how they would play for you. Well, that's what Curbs did with Gatting and Nelson, of course, coming from Brighton.
Yes, players that he knew he'd worked with, he knew he'd asked him, Gatting at the back. He had a travelling footballer in Gary Nelson who worked his socks off. No one covered more ground than this move. He didn't have flash tricks of a lot of strikers that could do step overs and drag backs, but whoever's playing alongside him really appreciated his work rate and his ability to score or make goals.
And particularly Gary, who's, you know, Gary has become just a Charlton great, hasn't he? He's become such a popular figure, through his performances for Charlton and played in the first game back at the Valley, as we'll talk about later. But just gone on to be a Charlton legend, really, hasn't he?
He has, yeah, and that's difficult to do. It's right at the end of your career when you come to, you know, he came to us just for those few seasons, but he's remained with us through other things, vets, which we'll probably go on and talk about later on.
Yeah,
he joined the Vets, was a great part of the Vets team, and that was all part of this Charlton feeling that built up so quickly among the players that we've already mentioned, and many, many more. I mean, we haven't even mentioned Steve Brown. He was just a youngster then, had a very bad knee operation, but
well, bounced back. Yeah, Steve was an apprentice. I was at Charlton at Sellers Park, and he had a very bad knee injury, and did what.
Yeah. Now, someone like Steve Brown never gets the credit for. He scored just a few goals in his career and often was a little bit in and out of the side when new signings were made over the years, but he battled away and he saved. He would save, I'd say, six or seven goals a season,
yes,
by last ditch tackles that were going to be goals that sometimes weren't noticed by the fans, but he threw his body in the way of these would-be goals against us. So although he didn't score too many, he saved at least six or seven. So that was worth scoring.
No, Steve Steve is another hugely popular player, and rightly so. And football fans do appreciate that player who gives 100% every game. They might not have the ability, they might not be able to score the goals, or they might not be flashy in any way, but you know exactly what they're going to give to you in that team, don't you? Players like Steve Brown.
Yes, that becomes the backbone of teams, and the desire to win inspires the players who have got more flair around them. But Brownie was a very, though perhaps there were quicker centre-halves than him, and he could also play full going goal. But
and also in goal,
The West Ham days, you know, it's for one half seasons.
Yes.
I know people were perhaps, well, are we really going to go back to the Valley? But I knew, you know, behind the scenes we would. Unfortunately, we sold Robert, and he didn't get the chance to score the first goal of the Valley. But, of course, someone else did.
Well, absolutely. So we sell Robert. We now know we are going back to the Valley, and the excitement around that time was tangible, wasn't it? You could feel it, couldn't you? I mean, I was at the Football League then, but even away from the club, you could just feel it in football that football people in general were just pleased that Cholton were going back to the Valley and appreciated the huge story behind it and the supporters and the commitment of the board and just everyone. I mean, everyone in football was willing Cholton on at that time, weren't they?
Absolutely. It was a marvellous time. Emotional. To think what the Cholton fans did. And those who were really close to it got that special day where it all went through with the Greenwich Council, etc. It was wonderful. And to actually walk back onto the turf, even though from my point of view, I was no longer a player, but for the players themselves who had for the first time going out on the Valley soil was terrific. Even though there were porter cabins around.
Yeah. Cabin City, wasn't it, really? The atmosphere around the club, the build-up going into those weeks just before we knew we were going to play back again at the Valley. But I think, Keith, that we should say, especially here, about the huge commitment that the supporters gave. I mean, at that time, it was incredible what the fans were doing, wasn't it? You know, the build-up to it, the commitment they showed, the dedication, the passion to get the Valley Party going and to contest local elections. And then they put the hands in the pocket because Robert Lee we needed extra finance. And, of course, the fans dipped their hands in the pocket once again and came up with a Valley investment plan, and they bought their season tickets. It's just an incredible commitment at that time, Keith, wasn't it?
It was. And, of course, in the late 80s and right at the beginning of the 90s, before I got to Charlton, this was all I was involved elsewhere in management, so I wasn't amongst it. But seeing what the Valley Party did and the fans and what they went through and their determination, they never gave up.
No.
Which can be a great thing to have at any club, you know. The fans around you, like you want your players to be the same way. You never give up because no matter how bleak it looks, you keep going and sometimes you can turn the whole thing around. And that's what they did. And they should never be forgotten.
But I know that message, you know, the work of the club and the work of the fans and the commitment of the board at that time, that I know that they... that got through to the players by yourself and Curbs and Gritty, that, you know, the players weren't distant from that at all. The players were all very close to what was going on at the time, weren't they?
Yes, we were making a new start in the history of the club after being away for, you know, so many years. And with had great directors at the time and Roger leading there.
Yeah.
Martin Simons and... so Richard Murray, obviously, and so many others, they're backing up. Mike Stevens, always in touch from America, and No, it was very special. It was an emotional day. From my point of view, obviously I was in the dressing room beforehand, Curls and Gritty organising the whole thing in terms of picking the team, and he left a couple of players out who were rather disappointed. I spent most of my time before the kickoff chatting to both Alan Pardew and a little bit with John Bumstead, who have both been left out of this big game.
Right, let's talk about this. So we now know we're playing Portsmouth. We're in December 1992. We're playing Portsmouth. The place was packed. I mean, the East Terrace you couldn't use. It was all temporary grandstands, Porter cabins. But I don't think I've ever had been involved in an atmosphere quite like it. And so the players, all to a man, must have wanted to have played. That, you know you're taking part in a historic moment. So to leave out senior players like Alan Pardew and John Bumstead, that was quite a decision at that time.
Yes, of course. And it was probably a surprise because, as you say, both those players were very much part of how well the team had been doing. But I think when I'm looking back at that time, the previous games, we had lost about four on the trot.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
There's a saying among managers, three's not so good if you lose three. Four is the red signs come out. If you lose five on the trot, you can lose your job. Now, that wasn't going to happen at Charlton because...
I was going to say, Keith, was that something that was bubbling under? That this game was a... it's the first game back at the Valley, but we don't want to lose too many more games. Was that a worry?
No, not at all. I mean, I was always close with the directors at the time. No, this was a different situation. I'm saying that any other club at that time, if you'd lost four or went on to lose five on the trot...
Yeah, no, you're right.
You could lose your job. But this was different. No one was going to lose their job, but, boy, we wanted to win that game, and every player did. And the fans, so few were there, really, when you think about it. 8,300 and something.
Yeah.
But you could have had 50,000 in there. It wouldn't have made any difference. The noise they made, the passion they showed, the tears that was shed, it was special. But there's always people who are disappointed, and as I mentioned, Johnny Bumstead was left out, and he'd be very disappointed. He scored, I think, the game before that. Alan Pardew was upset. Of course, Grizzy came in.
Well, I was just going to say, Steve Gritt, joint manager, picked himself at right back, and Darren Pitcher came in.
That's right. And I thought I'm storming in the office and having the words. If Gritty's playing, I want to play.
Well, I was going to say,
get on the wing.
You'd want to be on the substitute bench.
Yeah, absolutely. I was in my 40s by then.
But
the upset because he really didn't see it coming. He was a bouncy character, scored lots of goals for us in his time with us, and a wholehearted player. But these things happen, and it was the right choice. They've made the right choice. It's improved. We won 1-0, and that goal scored by Walshy will live on forever and ever.
Absolutely, it will. It's an incredible time. And Brian Moore, bless him, was commentating. So, Brian, who you knew from Gillingham, obviously, Brian Moore's.
Yes.
He was doing the commentary that day, and quite a famous commentary as well. We've won Walshy's goal, and we're back now at the Valley. So the work is now on to establish ourselves at the Valley and grow the ground. We were never really in relegation trouble at any time, though, were we, around that time?
No, for the next few years, we were steady, and that's exactly, they steadied the ship. You know, Curbs, Gritty steadied the ship. We lost Arnie Warren, at that time he was ill.
Yeah, and
came away from the club and was never able to come back. And in a way, that helped probably Curbs and Gritty to do their own thing completely, because that happened quite early on, and they were able to, you know, they couldn't turn to or have to get permission for things from, say, Arnie to run it through the directors.
No, and, you know, I love him to bits. Right? Arnie was a bit of a control freak in a lot of ways, yeah. Bless him.
He's done very well.
Yeah. But, he was certainly a big influence on my career. I doubt whether I'd have stayed in football as long if I hadn't had Arnie Warren as my general manager when I first came in.
He has so many contacts as well in the game.
Oh, 100%. So, here you are. We're back at the Valley. Steve and Alan are doing well. We're holding our own. And you started to introduce a few more team bonding type things as well, didn't you, the club around that time in your reserve team manager, but your sort of support role, I suppose. But you played a big role in keeping the morale and keeping the team bonding going, I remember.
I'd like to think so. It was a completely different, remember, for me after you've been manager and this new position.
Yeah.
But back up my club and the whole groups were. So yeah. It was special. Every day was a joy just to go in to the club. I had my team in terms of the managing the reserves, but there'll be other things where I thought, well, the players, we didn't have the money to go off to Spain and Portugal and all that in those days. I tried to do things maybe that were just a bit different, a bit of fun. You know, every Friday we'd have a yellow jersey where someone would end up having to wear the yellow jersey for doing something ridiculously poor, silly, or making a bit of a howl on the pitch, which became quite the thing. The players looked forward to it.
Well, it's something you established in the vets teams as well when we went away as well, because I won it a couple of times.
And you should have won it a lot more, too.
But you're right, Keith. I mean, great bit of fun, really. I mean, you know, you're, as you say, someone who did something silly or something stupid at a training session. But it was all part of your strategy, really, wasn't it?
It was. It was something that I thought was a good thing to keep everyone, once again, they were all, you know, most of them all good characters. If anyone was just thinking that they were better than the other, they were soon brought down by, no, they wear that yellow jersey and nobody could refuse it.
Yes.
It became more difficult as we went into the Premiership. But these years were great. Everyone took it in the right spirit. And even in one day, you're just thinking of different things to do. Because remember then, we had no warm-up coaches and things like that. I would take the warm-up. And so sometimes I'd throw it to Alex Dyer. You know, things were a bit down, we'd lost. Alex was a real character.
Yes.
Alex, take the warm-up this morning. He knew all the different things to do. He would be a different voice. He'd be lively. He'd have people in hysterics with one or two things that he did. So you just changed it around like that. But one day I walked actually into the gymnasium, which I'd often work with players after training. And someone was doing a few of these dips, like Brian Jacks used to do. He became one of the superstars.
Well, it was the BBC Superstars, wasn't it? He was the judo champion.
That's right.
To win it every series, didn't he, Brian Jacks?
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's incredible on these dips on the, like the parallel bars. But we had a smaller edition, and one of the young players would, doing these dips, and I just declared myself that I'm the champion at doing dips, just for a laugh to see. And a few of them responded, I know that you couldn't beat us, because I'm now into my 40s and seeming like an old man then, in my mid-40s perhaps, looking back. Next thing I know, there's a challenge. Pardew's heard about it. They then say, you're champion. I said, oh, yes. No, I'm not.
Self-appointed.
I've never done it before. but then they challenged me. They said they had someone who could beat me and do more dips that I could. So I said, okay, we arranged it for a couple of weeks down the line. That gave me a bit of time, really, to get in some fitness work done on it. Then comes the day. Anyone who wants to watch this event in the gymnasium must pay £2. Which was, you know, hard to get out of players in those days.
I'm sure.
It wasn't easy. Everyone said they paid their money. I think the apprentices got in for half price. It was packed out. I'm now waiting in the gymnasium. John Vaughan was the first challenger coming in.
Keith, I think we should say that they weren't paying you. They were paying for your reserve team fund.
I'm glad you put that in. Yes. It wasn't because
this wasn't a money making way by yourself, was it?
I wish they had been paying me. That I could have done with some money. This was to raise money for the reserve team for their Christmas party, and actually it worked out very well. But John Vaughan, massive shoulders, a goalkeeper, good goalkeeper for us.
Yeah,
previously with Cambridge, he was one of the contestants. I mean, he looked fearsome, and came in their main contestant as well, and in came Linvoy Primus. But the music that came first was simply the being blazed out on the big box that they were holding there. Pardew was singing, Carl Lieberman was there, Alex Dyer. They're going to win. Their man was going to win.
So they were psyching you up with a little bit of Chris Eubanks type simply. The best.
Yeah.
And he comes in with all his seconds.
Absolutely. And obviously everyone was on the side of the players. John Vaughan set it off. Gary Nelson was in charge for that. You had to come lower down as you did. You had to touch
your Why team. Am I not surprised, Keith, that Gary Nelson was in charge?
Yeah. Oh, he the yellow jersey and all that. He was right, backed everything up like that. He was to it. But this is all, you know, the humour, a change, things people can talk about rather than always on the football side of things. Yeah. John Vaughan did about 39 dips, and he went down for the 40th, but didn't quite touch. And Nelson went, no, he had to go down again. And again, he got a no, he didn't quite touch. Now, he's furious because his arms are beginning to go. He had to finish there. I think he was going to tear Nelson apart, but no, he controlled him. And was taken to the side. Then comes Linvoy Primus, because I did say, as in the inverted commas, I hadn't beaten anyone at this point, I had the privilege of being older, had the privilege of going last. Linvoy came in, and I've got to say this, I mean, anyone that's seen Linvoy stripped down, this is the perfect figure of any man wants to be. Broad shoulders, powerful. No, not an ounce of fat, and he walked up and is in an all black outfit as well. The part there to enormous cheers from all the players. He did, and he knocked out 45 dips. And Pardew now is terribly laughing now. And you won't be able to beat that. Went on there, I got up to 43, but I knew I could do more. I had been doing a little bit of secret training. I knew I could do more. I put the shutters on as I'm going, and they started to, oh, yes, he's gone. And I pumped a few out. Got to near 50, I was done. We won the money. But it was things like that we kind of, they talked about, they still bump into me, you know, at different events, and they will remind me of that particular day all these years afterwards. So it just shows. Coach and manager, but I wasn't too bad on the dips.
No, I'd probably still do it, Keith, knowing you. These are the where football fans probably wouldn't get to know much about this sort of thing that was going on there. But it was all part of creating that right atmosphere, that right team bond, that you could laugh together as well. So important in gelling an effective team together as well, isn't it?
It is. I think a team comes together in many ways, and everyone has a different way of doing it. And this sort of thing helped just to break the monotony of every, because you're training for 10 months, you're together, you know, you need different things to happen.
And yeah.
Even players were getting older as we moved through the 90s, but into the mid-90s, people like Gary Nelson would be getting too old to play, but they could go into what was formed the vet team.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
And around this time, obviously, the veterans team that you instigated and really kept a lot of those players who were coming to the end of their careers, probably have moved on, some of them as well, but they were Charlton people, and you formed them into the Charlton Veterans, and I had the pleasure of getting involved in as well. But this is also when a person called Peter Varney first came to the fore as well, isn't it?
Yes, that's the first. I say the first time I met him was when we were organising a game. He'd asked me to get a team together, and we were going to play against Millwall at the Valley. And he was working for the British Brain and Spine Organisation.
Well, a little background on that, of course, is that all started through Steve Gritt's daughter,
yes,
who had a brain problem and brain cancer, and that's how that charity started. And Peter got involved and became the general manager of that charity, I think.
Yes, he did so well. I mean, I got the teams together, which was great. Everyone was willing and happy to play. That was the first time Derek Hales came back, and the game was at the Valley on a Sunday. We had great support from people like John Hayes, John Humphrey, so many people around the
club
at that time. So it was a wonderful thing to be able to raise money, particularly because of Stevie Gritt's connection with his daughter.
Yes.
But it just showed you the thoughts of the players, the former players, that the forward line was, at that time, we had the same forward line. We had Powell on the right, we had Flanagan and Hales up front, myself on the left.
Yes.
And so it was other players playing that day, and Gritty himself, obviously. And we had nearly 5,000 people to see this game.
Well, I had the great pleasure of being asked to put a celebrity game together before that one. Because I was then at the Football League running the Football League's celebrity matches before our cup finals. And so along came to that day people like Ray Winston and Chris Evans and the like. And Ray and I actually played in the Millwall team preceding your game. It was an unbelievable attendance for a charity match. It was attendance.
There were all his mafia friends and Ray Winston, the party place. they'd all turn up.
So let's move this forward now, Keith. And when did you, or did you even, get wind of the fact we might be moving away from the joint manager approach?
Well, I really didn't. It was a complete surprise to me. Because we were going along steadily, we were having to sell players to keep going. However, the team was solid, never in any doubt of being in the relegation situation. And this was a decision made by the board, and obviously it proved to be another stepping stone forward. But Gussie did a terrific job. Obviously,
yes,
had problems at home with Hayley at that time.
Yeah. So Alan Kirbishley becomes manager of Cheltenham, and
Les Reed comes in.
Les Reed came in from the FA at that time, Keith.
Yes.
Didn't he? Les had been at the FA a few years, I think. And you took on the scouting as well as your reserve team manager's role at that time.
Yes, that's right, because Arnie had had his problems. So then I was in charge of the scouting, which was not a vast amount of people. We had people like Brian Ryder, who was there. Ted Davies joined.
Lovely guys, yeah.
Formerly with QPR, I met him there. And a number of others who were already there. And they worked well, and we sort of got very good players in. And Brian Ryder in particular did a great job on the non-league level.
Absolutely. And you know, the team did well that year, that first year, because ended up in the playoffs.
Yes, indeed. Unfortunately, we lost at Crystal Palace, so we won't talk about that anymore. No, let's move on.
We'll move forward.
Yeah, but again, we're moving in the right type of direction.
Absolutely. So we're now into the 96-97 season. So we're moving along that era. And you had a huge part in the recruitment of someone who just went on to be synonymous with Cheltenham Athletic, one Mark Kinsella.
Yes, Mark became available at that season, pre-season time. It's with Colchester. I'd seen him play a few times when I was manager at Gillingham and Mason. Really thought he was a good player. We got him in for a week. Well, from the first day, I thought, well, we must sign him. But it didn't quite happen for whatever reason. The week came to an end. I'm assuming we're signing him for at least about 3 years. But nothing happened. And he went off. And actually, Kerb said, oh, I'd like just to see Kins this coming Saturday because he's playing for Colchester in a pre-season friendly or whatever. And I did say to him, I said, but there's just no point because I don't care if he trips over the ball every time he gets hold of it. He misses 5 goals, can't pass from anyone on his own side. I fancy him and I'll never change him. That's how strong.
Why do you think there was a reticence to sign him when you had him in your...
I'm not sure of that. Probably they were looking for maybe someone different in terms of his pace. So, you know, pace was becoming a big thing. He wasn't a pacey sort of player, but he had a great brain. He was a leader of men on that field.
Yes.
He led by example. But anyway, the whole thing, what happened after that was Gillingham came in and we then acted and we paid out 150,000, 200%, something like that for him. Perhaps it was easy for and that we didn't have too much money in the bank at that time, perhaps, to do that sort of thing. But it was proved to be an exceptionally good signing, as we all know.
Oh, that's absolutely incredible player for Cheltenham. But we mentioned him earlier, but he comes to the notice of Richard Murray and the board through his work with the British Brain and Spine Foundation and the veterans teams, and Peter Barney comes in as general manager.
Yes, which was a crucial move. Peter was he ended with Peter when he came to the building. He sold. You just pass him on over to Curbs, and I go, oh dear, Barney. The awkward ones were falling ones as such, but around the football. really, we didn't want to deal with that sort of thing. And he took it right away and dealt with those with the board and made a big part. And raising money, he was absolutely phenomenal the way he raised the money to help us buy players. And that season, the season after we got Kinsella, was the season where it all started taking off. And he played an even bigger role then, yeah.
Yeah. Peter, I was before with the British Painters Flying Gun, but obviously back to work with him a little bit later on in my career, but and work with the club. But no, he was a brilliant signing at the right time because it gave us that professionalism on the management side, you know, the administration of the club. Not the team management, the administration of the club, and brilliant with fundraising. And as you say, a very, very good person. And again, we started to bring in great characters. So talk to me about building that team in the 97-98 season, Keith, with some of the players that we brought in who were superb for us and played a big role in getting us to the playoff final that year.
Well, the obvious one that came right at the beginning of the year and Curbs' biggest sign, I would say, in many, many ways, particularly when you think about the time, Clive Mindonko.
Yes.
I don't know if you've heard him this year, but he's not a bad goal scorer.
No.
Curbs did terrific to actually get him to sign because I think Sunderland were in for him at the time and he convinced him to come to Charlton.
And that must have been a huge piece of negotiation because Clive, as we all know, famously, is a Sunderland fan.
Yeah.
And he was playing for Grimsby at the time. So to get the opportunity to go and play for your boyhood club, and yet he chose to...
Yes, it was just a key move. You could see we were building for the future. He was the first big signing, but probably a crucial signing. But I thought there were three crucial signs, apart from the players we had already at the club now, solid sound players. Mark Bowen came in, he did very well for us.
Yes.
But then come the time, round about February, March, I think it was a later window, transfer window in those days. I may be wrong, but I thought Timothy was a little bit later. But anyway, players that came in, Brighty came in just before. And Brighty, he was never quick, but he...
What a clever player, though.
But so clever. He was a magnificent header of the ball.
Yes.
He had all the little touches. He knew when to just put his shoulder into someone, which went to buy a free kick. And he was dominating...
He's a very, very, very good player. Yeah. A superb career, and we got him at the right time. But if I may say, he was adept as well, wasn't he? In a football capacity, he knew the game.
Oh, he knew the game inside out. And what he did, a lot of the young players kind of followed him around a little bit, he had big influence on them. And he would put them in order, you know. If anyone tried to knock him about in training, he would show them what toughness was made of. Tom Fulton did that once and smashed him in the air. And I thought, oh, I don't like that. the next header, it was John. These things happen in football, but Fulton learned many things, I think, through someone like Mark Wright as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
became a good centre-half in the end.
Let's talk about some of those other players, Keith, like around that time that you alluded to. So Clive had come in, huge signing for us. You'd mentioned Mark Bowen, you'd mentioned Mark Wright. But other people came in with Danny Mills.
Well, there were two crucial ones that came in as the latest signings. That gave us that shot in the arm that you always need. Most of the teams that go for promote just about that February, March time, need someone or two players in and be real top players, you could say, could make a difference. And in came Kenny Mills and Eddie Howes.
Yes.
And that helped. And also we had a goalkeeper who came from nowhere, Sasha Illich.
I mean, it's quite an incredible story, Sasha's story, isn't it? And you played a big, huge role in that as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, I haven't seen him. I just got a phone call from a director, Mike Stevens, who said, oh, and he'll keep in contact, because I've been out to America and lived there for a few years. He automatically contacted me and said, can you just have a look at this fella? Is that Hastings? And I'm thinking, oh, blimey. Is that Hastings? But he's supposed to be good, and I'm passing on this recommendation. Sasha came in the building. He trained with us. I was mainly trained. We didn't have a goalkeeping coach then, as such. And I'd work with him every day. And he was a tremendous appetite for working hard, diving all over the place in training. But he couldn't get into the reserve side because we had too many goalkeepers at the time. We had Pedersen and Salmon.
Yes.
But what happened? He went off. I got him a game at Welling. He played two games for Welling. He was outstanding, which was just as well. I'd phoned him up saying, you must do your very best, because he was a bit down. He thought, oh, I've come here. I'm ending up going on again.
Hmm.
We loaned him out there. He got in the reserve side. Steve, he did so well. He kept clean sheet after clean sheet. It was quite incredible. And he would come out for some outrageous things, but I'd just say to my centre-halves, look, as soon as you see him coming, just get back on the line and defend the goal line. Like Lawrenson and Hansen used to do for Grobbelaar.
Yes.
Grobbelaar wouldn't always catch those balls that came across. But he did terrific. His confidence was through. He got in the team because Salmon got injured. And then I think he kept 8 or 9 sheets before going into the playoffs.
Remember, there was sort of this feeling, and I'm sure I'm not alone in feeling this way, that Charlton couldn't let her go in, that Sasha couldn't be beaten. I mean, it was an incredible run of no one scoring against us.
No, you just have to look back. It was about 8 or 9 games, both obviously against Ipswich. We won 1-0 away from home, 1-0 at home. Was it 1-0 or 2-0? 1-0 at home. To get. So we're thinking as we're playing, you know, we get to the final, one goal could be enough. I'm never very good at forecasting myself.
You could have been more wrong.
I think I'd be 1-0.
Now, so talk to me a little bit about the build up to that. So we're now going to Wembley, and we're now one game away from being in the Premier League, which has been going a few seasons at that point, started in 92 in the Premier League. So this is our chance to go into the Premier League. Talk to me about the build-up of that time, Keith.
When you're saying, what, actually on the day?
Well, yeah, on the day, or just the pressure, the huge pressure, Curbs, yourself. Did you feel that this was a huge opportunity for the club to establish itself and to kick on after getting back to the Valley, and getting into the Premier League will help us kick on even further? Was there big pressure on you guys?
Well, I don't think there was so much because, I mean, there's always pressure to win, but we were not the favourites. Sunderland had been at the top there, I think, for quite some time or thereabouts. They looked certainly to get promotion, and they just lost it. We were on a run.
Mm.
As we said, not conceding goals, winning game. We were very, very confident. So we were in a good position. And the favourites were Sunderland.
Well, they had Phillips and Quinn up front, of course, didn't they?
Absolutely. The Toshack Keegan type of situation there. And they were two, the best striking two you could think of at that time.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. Okay, so we're going into that game. We're at Wembley. Oh, this is the old Wembley, of course. We're going into that game at Wembley, just as an aside. Actually, was my last ever football match as a Football League employee because I'd agreed to join Swindon not long after.
Oh, right.
So my last occasion as a league employee, my last Wembley final was my team, was Charlton. So it was a huge thing, huge day, but a special day for me personally as well. So here we are, we're invincible, we hadn't let a goal in, and we go 1-0 up, Keith.
All over, isn't it? It's all over.
All over.
We're not going to concede. No one can beat Sasha at this stage.
No.
Yeah, even though they've got a fearsome strike, they're a strikers. It seemed what happened after that was just incredible. One of the great games of all time at Wembley, certainly in Charlton's history. Mendonca the hero, but so many players played a great part. Those who came on as subs. And it was
well, everyone played their role, didn't they? The subs all contributed to the success of the day. Whether that was John Robinson's corner for Richard Rufus's first goal, whether Steve Brown's crunching tackle, Steve Jones's cross. I mean, everyone played a part, didn't they?
They did, and for Richard Rufus to score, that was his first goal, and he played about 100 games by then.
Yeah.
And hadn't scored a goal. Nice one to start the occasion by. Goal ever is at Wembley. So.
And I remember in one of the Q&As we said that the thinking was their goalkeeper would come for the ball. So to make him come for it, the corner was taken a certain way by John.
Yes, but the actual crucial thing that happened was that Mark Bright cleverly just took out the keeper in almost an unseen way. He just blocked him from getting the ball and being able to get the fist to it. And that was his know-how. You know, it was typical of Bright what he perhaps noticed it too much, but when you watch the replay, it's what he did and put it into what was more or less the empty net in terms of the goalkeeper.
Absolutely. So let's kick it forward now. We know we've had a huge hat-trick. Each goal was class from Clive Mendonca. But we're now in the penalties. And I know, famously, Kurtz couldn't look when it was just... I mean, no one was giving any quarter. They were all going in, weren't they?
I know. But we'd had 13... Was it 13... penalties, and they just kept going in. Curve said, well, I'm not going to look at the next one. And he put his hands across his face. And as he did that, the rest is history. Gray, well, you can say it was saved. It was a great save from Sasha. And of course, he became a hero. Not that, he let how many goals had he had in that day? 10. I know 6 were penalties, but he let 10 goals in.
Yeah.
He was out here.
Yeah, invincible.
No, but what he did before to get us there was absolutely fantastic.
Sasha came up with this cock and ball story about 2pp at the Q&A we had recently. That's how he decided this coin that we found in the goal area or something. And we're all saying, don't be silly, that's nonsense. But he stuck to his story.
Yes, it's the first time I've heard it was at that Q&A day of the dinner.
Which is suspicious of itself.
Yeah, I needed my soup that day. But anyway, he's always a character, still is, and he's very good about coming over and at any opportunity to support Charlton. They were his best days, obviously. And that would be a huge day for him.
And promoted into the Premier League.
Yeah. Happened. The hero Mendonca, and all of us stayed out to the. We kept going to the fans and waving to them, etc. We've been asked to stay out as long as possible, so the Sunderland fans could go.
Yeah.
It was just about empty. The last ones coming off, strangely enough, was me because I was worn out, and Mendonca, who still being clapped by our fans as he's going towards the other end. and there were just a few supporters there. They're about five, and they were really nasty to Clive, you know, shouting about being a traitor and all this. And
right,
and
yeah,
it really upset Clive that, you know, it's the greatest day in his life. And something like that can ruin it for a while.
Yeah.
When we got in the dressing room, it was no great celebrations. I think everyone was totally shattered. It was fairly quiet in there.
I can imagine. And the enormity of what Charlton had achieved, you know, just a few short years after having to sell our best player to get to get back to the Valley, playing in front of a part port cabin, part temporary structure stadium. Here we are, winning at Wembley and getting into the Premier League. I mean, it is a fairy tale story in a lot of ways, Keith, isn't it?
Yeah. A real, and I'm thinking of the fans we're seeing as we're coming out of the stadium, we're going to the reception. They were sitting about, normally us walking along, I think with Clive and a few other the players, and normally people jumping up for autographs and that. They were sitting on walls and lying on the floor, totally exhausted.
Everyone was mentally drained.
They were mentally drained. We were all mentally drained. It was a long, long day through penalties and everything. But what a sensational day. And something at that time then, I think everyone's minds, and particularly those long, faithful ones that had helped in the 80s and the beginning of the 90s to get Charlton back to the Valley and now see us at Wembley.
The fans who never gave up, who never boycotted at Selhurst Park, who put up with coming over, supporting us at Selhurst Park to keep the club alive, help keep the club alive, all got their rewards in that one day.
Absolutely.
It was a momentous day, but it was also the last day of Les Reed's career at Charlton, because he's accepted a role to go back to the FA, hadn't he?
Yes. It started in the FA, and he was a very FA coach and did well for us. He was very studious in the way he put sessions on. He'd had a bit of a scare with a bleed in his head at one stage.
Yes, I remember.
He walked off the field this day, and he was in terrible pain. Jim Hendry did a great job him so quickly to the right people in the hospital. He recovered fully from that, but a frightening moment for him.
Yes.
But, being in the professional game is, you know, on the front line is a bit different. And I think he was happy to go back to the FA in those days.
Yes. Well, and this is when Alan brought in Mervyn, the first team coach, and your role changed. You became assistant manager, Keith.
Yes, we're now the bigger club immediately because we're in the Premiership. It's a three-man job, you could say, because especially with the amount of now, I mean, Kerbs has obviously a fantastic job, made some crucial decisions and the right decisions to get as far as we had. We've already said how important Peter Varney was. Yes. Raising money,
yes,
people he was knowing, he was, and raised money for the likes of Mills and Eddie Owls and people like that to give us that final push. And we were now, things would never quite be the same after that for Charlton, because our first pre-season in Ireland, and everyone knew Kerbs now suddenly couldn't go anywhere without being recognised.
No.
Everyone in the country now. I noticed a change immediately. Not in him. He was just a sub. But he really, everyone just knew him, became extremely famous on
that. Well, okay, we're now in the last year of the decade. And we're playing in the Premier League 98-99 season. You'd have the change of the management structure. Les had left, Mervyn had come in, you'd stepped up to assistant manager. And we gave it a good go that first year, Keith, didn't we?
I thought we were relegated, we were went down with honour.
Yes.
With pride. It was incredible that season. It really was. I mean, for us to do so well, we started off with a 0-0 draw against Newcastle, I think it was. And we went down to 10 men.
Yes.
And yet we stood 0-0 in front of 50,000 Newcastle fans. And then I think the first home game, or virtually the first home game, we beat Southampton 5-0. Met Donga hat-trick again. He liked getting the hat-trick.
He certainly did. I didn't personally see much of that season because it was the season I spent at Swindon Town. So I didn't get personally to see that few of the away games. But at one point, after that 5-0, the league.
I can't remember. Kept turning the league table the other way up, thinking we should be bottom. But we had such a good start. Yeah, winning 5-0, drawing away from home, and conceded the goal then. And I think we drew against Arsenal after that as well. So,
yeah.
Yes, a steady start there. Because we were good, we were honest. We brought in a few players then, and they just strengthened us a little bit more. And we very well, nearly, we got right to the end of the season without whip through the season. We got right to the end. The penultimate game, we were at Villa Park, and we're still in there with a chance of staying up.
Yes, I was actually at that game, but we still had a mathematical chance of staying up, didn't we, at that point?
Yes. Now, the other team that were in relegation trouble was Southampton.
Yes.
And, you know, we want them to go down. We want them to lose, you know.
And you sent a scout there.
Yes. Alan Pardew had finished at the club, and he was doing a bit of scouting, and he went to the Wimbledon game against Southampton just to keep us in touch. We're on the phone with each other, keeping in touch. So we need to know, well, if they win, if Wimbledon win, then we're in, if Southampton beat Wimbledon, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
We have to win to stay alive, and that's what happened. Steve Brown had to go on the field as goalkeeper because Pettersson was sent off.
Yes.
If I remember correctly, he was sent off, wasn't he? Yes.
I think so, yes. Yeah.
It was all a blur. There was so much going on that day. Brown was going on. Oh, he was to go on that field that day. And I don't blame. It's such a crucial game. It's 3-3. On goes Brownie. As Brownie goes on, the scoreline at Southampton-Wimbledon game, Wimbledon were now 2-0 down. They scored two quick goals. We had to win.
Yes.
Trying to get that message with all the noise going on. A draw was no longer any good. We had to win. And of course, the history says, Danny Mills stepped up, took a free kick. I think it's about the only goal he scored for us, maybe.
Buried it though, didn't he?
We lived to fight another day.
And that another day was an all or nothing game on the last day of the season against Sheffield Wednesday.
Yes, and it proved to be in a way a little bit of a damp squib because of what happened. Southampton, I think, got a goal fairly early on, and we were going to be in trouble. And Sheffield Wednesday scored a late goal, but we were virtually down then.
Yeah.
And although the disappointment was immense, because we still believe we could somehow pull it off, and we walked round to clap the crowd, and the crowd were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
had a friend from America who was over, and he couldn't believe. He said, but I can't. What's going on? You've lost. You've been relegated. You'll be shouted and yelled at in America. He said, your crowd are...
Was he Welsh, Keith?
Yes, I'm glad my Welsh accent came over so well. It's not usually that good. This should be my American accent.
No, I think you forego that.
Yeah. Apologies to anyone who may be listening. No, but it was a strange situation when you're being relegated and everyone stands up, stays to the end, claps you off the field. They knew that every one of the players, the board members, everyone had given their heart and soul to trying to keep us up.
Absolutely. And I think this is a good place for us to sort of bring the 90s to an end, because at that time we'd given it a good go. We'd had a very, very good first year in the Premier League. Sadly, we had to get relegated, but we had strong resolve around the club at that time to actually keep our best players. We're going to add to them, and we're going to give it a good go back up there as soon as we can. And that's what we did the next season, of course.
You did indeed. And although we've just touched on it a little bit, with the vets team going at that time, so you can imagine we were getting good youngsters coming through.
Yeah.
Scotty Parker, Konchesky were on the verge. Lisby was just there with John Fortune. And Lee Bowyer, we haven't even mentioned Lee Bowyer during this.
Oh, no, of course not.
Fantastic
yeah.
player.
Yeah.
He was delight to train. He would make an average session come alive.
Yeah.
He, a bit like Billy Bonds was able to do for Lyle and West Ham.
Mm.
And he was, John Lyle would just say to Billy Bonds, okay, Bill, get going. And he would kind of get a bit aggressive out there and lift the whole session. Bowyer was like that. He did all the right things at such a young age. And it was a pleasure to have those sort of players. But we had the young coming through. We had the team that was solid and doing well. Quite exciting now with the likes of Mendonca. And in the background, all the way through the vein of this, was the players that were leaving the club and getting too old to play, and including Gritty and Curbs,
yeah,
part of the vets team. So
yeah,
it was an extension from young to the present day to the old, keeping the thing going. And we actually went off to Barcelona on our first trip.
I remember it very, very well. Yeah.
Yes, you were there. And yeah, these sort of things, not many clubs at that time were doing. And again, Peter Varney on this would be get all the sponsorship to raise money for this to happen, where the players went out with their wives for the first time on tours like this. And we had a fantastic period there. So many funny stories to tell that probably needs to be a whole separate session in itself.
Well, we'll probably a session on the vets teams with you then, Keith, because you're quite right. I mean, that last trip, we won the competition, but we had performances from the likes of Mike Bailey and yourself and Mike Flanagan.
And how can we not mention Bob Boulder? I know he's coming to the vet scene. And he was there, Bob, an integral part of the whole group, not only keeping us all laughing from the bars he visited to the coming on as a striker rather than the goalkeeper. And of course, we sometimes forget how good he was for us in those late 80s.
Superb goalkeeper. And one of the great Charlton characters over the last 20 years or so. I mean, what a great player for us as well. And as you say, still around, still involved with the vets, but still involved with Charlton Athletic Community Trust.
Yes, he does a great job, you know, very good-hearted Bob, and keeps himself in great condition as well. Every credit to him. And it's always a pleasure to see him. It always brings a smile to everyone's face, whether bumps into it.
Well, let's pick up the veterans when we start the next episode of this. But Keith, thank you very much indeed. Your memories and your reminiscences from the 90s. It's great to talk to you about these fantastic times that the club's had. And really, if you've enjoyed this podcast, please consider making a donation to CACT at www.cact.org.uk/donate. And any money raised will help CACT keep going, and we're working for the community at this incredible time we're all going through at the moment. But thank you very much indeed, Keith. And we'll talk about the start of the next decade next time we meet up.
Cheers, Steve. Pleasure.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.